Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. Thanks very much for joining me today. It's always a pleasure to have you with us if you've been listening already. And if you just tuned in, welcome aboard. I'm excited about having a new friend on the show, folks. Dan Reingold is with us. And for 14 years, he was managing director and telecom analyst for Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch, and Credit Suisse First Boston. And he did that for 14 years. He followed the telecom industry as an analyst, and then he escaped. And now he's currently the project director for telecom finance at the Columbia Institute for Teleinformation at Columbia's Graduate School of Business. He's now the author of a book, a very important book, folks, and one that I think will reveal a lot to you about what goes on in the bowels of Wall Street. Confessions of a Wall Street Analyst, as by Dan Reingold. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jim.
It's good to have you here. Congratulations on your book.
Thank you. It took 2 years to write it and 14 years of experience, actually 20 years of experience, to put together what I've got in the book.
Like birthing a baby, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And congratulations on escaping, apparently successfully.
Well, Wall Street's a very tempting place and a very alluring place, and the speed, you know, the pace of the action and the amount of money that flows around and the sort of risk game it addicts a lot of people. A lot of people are unable to leave it. They just get addicted. It gets in their blood. I'm lucky. I was more of a telecom guy, more interested in the industry than I was in Wall Street itself, and so I guess I'm able to pull away from it and look back at it.
Dan, every day, people who, if you listen to any kind of new business news at all, the word industry analyst or stock analyst or sector analyst or whatever, we hear that term all the time. And I'm going to wager that most people, even in many investors, stock market investors, don't really know what those guys do. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I'll tell you what I did, because I was an industry analyst, meaning I specialized in one industry, actually one sub-segment of an industry. Telecom services was my coverage list, you know, the companies you've heard of, like AT&T and Verizon and Quest and companies like that. And my job was to, you know, the bottom line is an analyst has to recommend, put a rating on each stock they cover and have an outlook for the industry and make recommendations to investors. So it's really a buy, sell, or hold kind of an outcome. But to do that, you've got to try to understand everything about the industry and the companies, the economics of the business, the financial outlook, the regulatory issues and outlook, the engineering and technical new technologies that are coming, and competitive impacts from both technology and from other companies.
Well, and what's the background? What's required to have the background to do a job like that?
Well, people come from a lot of different things. I mean, they have to be good with numbers and financial thing. They have to have a good training in finance or accounting or both. It helps to know something about the industry you're covering. I came from MCI. I had worked for MCI for 6 years before I came to Wall Street. And so I had a good feel for, you know, all the issues that drive a telecom services company. It helps to have a resilient personality, or maybe we should call it a thick skin, because when you're making predictions about the future, just like the weatherman, you're going to be right and you're going to be wrong. And the nice thing about the stock market, and also the brutal thing about the stock market, as we all know as investors, is that every day it tells you how dumb you are or how smart you are. And if you're covering a group of stocks, or if you're an investor in general and you're investing throughout the market, what you learn every day is how dumb you are on some things and how brilliant you think you are on maybe one or two things.
Well, that's not very comforting to investors who rely on analysts, is it?
Well, I guess that's the first warning that comes out of my book.
Exactly.
So, first of all, there's all kinds of conflicts of interest and devious motives that people on Wall Street might have, including Wall Street analysts who are supposed to be independent and, mm-hmm. and honest and objective. The second thing is that, you know, and this is a little bit of a defensive statement on my part, but, you know, just like professional athletes, there are days when you don't do so well.
Right.
Even though you're really good at something or you really know something, you're going to get some things wrong, and that's worse.
As we've seen with the some of the expectations we've had with some of the Olympic athletes. Dan, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, Dan is one of the guys who was watching companies like WorldCom back in 2000, 2001, 2002. And when we come back, I'm going to ask him, Dan, how did you miss a target that big? 20 tails. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 17 Till. There's a little music from that little band from Texas. Dan Reingold is our guest. He's the author of Confessions of a Wall Street Analyst, along with Jennifer Reingold. And it's a true story of inside information and corruption in the stock market. And Dan, speaking of which, my little tease as we went to the break, as you admit in your book, you were one of the people who was responsible for watching, and I'll just use this one company as an example, watching WorldCom. How did you miss a target that big?
Well, the WorldCom fraud was really masterfully done, I have to admit, in hindsight. CFO there, Scott Sullivan, who has pleaded guilty to all kinds of fraud charges.
What's he got, 20 years?
Scott got 5 because he helped to
convict
Bernie Ebbers. Bernie Ebbers got 25.
That's right, he got 20.
But Scott's in jail now. Here's the problem with WorldCom. They bought MCI after a long string of acquisitions. They probably made 60 acquisitions in a 10-year period. And when you make acquisitions, you usually get a lot of efficiencies and cost savings that helps to boost the earnings over time. And the numbers that Scott was reporting were very much, at least in my opinion, were very much in line with what you would expect of a company that was properly integrating its acquisitions, especially the big one, the MCI acquisition. Tremendous amount of cost savings because of all the overlap and network synergies and economies of scale and all the kind of things that you think about in business, small or large. Well, it turns out that they actually weren't operating the company. They were so busy sort of hyping their stock and cajoling Wall Street into loving them, et cetera, that they didn't do the integration, and therefore they didn't get the cost savings, and therefore they missed the numbers big time. But instead of reporting that, Scott and a few people who worked for him figured out a way to just change the numbers. They capitalized dollars instead of expensing them, which made earnings look a lot better. We all know that in hindsight. I mean, I missed it, and I missed it big. I wasn't a big cheerleader of theirs. I wasn't a big supporter of theirs, except for a couple years right at the time when they bought MCI. But in the years, the 2 years before the fraud came out, I was increasingly cautious and was known on the street as someone who was not a WorldCom cheerleader, because they had a large number of, you know, very, very aggressively and optimistic cheerleaders from the Wall Street community. But when the news came out in June of 2002 that the CFO was being fired and the numbers were being restated, and the restatement was only $4 billion when they started. It ended up, after all the investigation, it was $11 billion.
$11 billion, yeah. The largest in history.
Yeah, largest fraud in history. Huge amount of investor dollars lost. It was over $180 billion of market value that basically went to zero. And it was astonishing how, once it was uncovered, by the internal auditors in the company, it was astonishing how simple it was. And I won't say obvious, though, because, again...
But Dan, what have we learned from this?
Well...
Because, you know, here's the thing, Dan. We just went through the suspension of the laws of economics in the 90s with the dot-com era. I'm looking at one of my favorite books, Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds by Charles McKay, which was written in 1849,
right.
Which was all about the book. It's all about the Mississippi scheme, the South Sea bubble, and the tulipomania.
Right.
You know, we've had these things before. What happened in the dot-com era, what happened in the telecom meltdown, you know, we've seen this before. How could this have happened again, and what did we learn?
Well, I think the main thing we learned, unfortunately, is it's going to happen again, which is why I wrote the book. I want to show people how it works inside of Wall Street and how human psychology and human temptation get out of control, both on Wall Street and, in this case, on Main Street as well.
Mm-hmm.
It is human psychology to be hopeful, to be optimistic, and to see change. In this case, it was the Internet as something that was a wild change that opened up huge potential opportunities, and to put far more, the psychology is to put far more certainty on that than it deserves, and to follow the crowd. And we saw that in the book you mentioned, and all mm-hmm. the different manias over history. It's very hard when you're inside a mania or part of a mania to see it for all
right.
you see it later on.
Probably almost impossible. Here's a question for you, Dan, as we go to a break in a half a minute. With all the things you know about how things work inside Wall Street, and I mean inside, I'm putting emphasis on inside, does a small investor have a chance in that environment?
No, my bottom line conclusion is we all, now that I'm an outsider, we should all buy index funds. And at the most, well-diversified, low-cost mutual funds. When you try to pick stocks, individual stocks, you're going to get – it's an unfair playing field. You're going to get mm-hmm. beaten by the inside information.
You're always going to be, if not 2 weeks, you're always going to be an hour behind the news, aren't you?
You know what? Even if you're a minute behind, and you're going to be, of course – you're gonna be buying price stocks too high or selling them too low.
Index funds or low cost mutual funds, right?
Yep,
that's what he recommends. Dan Rungold, the author of Confessions of a Wall Street Analyst. When we come back, I want to talk about chasing the stock price. What's wrong with that, and why is that part of the problem with the marketplace today? Tintel, stay with us. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Dan Rungold is our guest, and he's the author of Confessions of a Wall Street Analyst. Dan, tell us where the book's available, and give us your website if you want, please.
Sure. My website is www.wallstreetconfessions.com. It's a lot of information up there, and book reviews, and photos from the book, and things like that. And the charities to which we're donating the proceeds, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm glad you reminded me of that. I meant to bring that up. All the proceeds that you're getting from the book, you're donating to charity.
That's correct.
Thank you for that.
Also available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and most bookstores, including Barnes & Noble, et cetera, Borders, Walden Books, a long list of bookstores that are selling the book right now. It was in the stores as of last Tuesday.
Confessions of a Wall Street Analyst. Dan, here's a question I have for you that I've been dying to ask someone like you for a long time. I believe one of the systemic problems that we have in the marketplace today is that the executives of most big companies, publicly traded companies, are focused more on chasing their stock price. And they do that by operating to make stock analysts happy, instead of operating to serve their customers and differentiating themselves from their competitors. I believe that's one of the things that's wrong with the American marketplace today. What do you think?
I totally agree. I can't tell you how many times I have gotten, as when I was an analyst, I got phone calls from CEOs, CFOs, other executives, haranguing me for something I had written or for my rating on the stock or for my target price or something. And what I would say to them is exactly what you just implied. I'd say, you know what, why don't you go run your company? If you could run it better and focus 100% of your time on running it efficiently, setting the right strategy, selling the right products, keeping your customers happy, the stock price will take care of itself. Let the markets, let the stock market have its supply and demand and work out your stock price. Don't you try to influence it. One of the big problems is that a lot of these executives are trying to make money off the stock.
Mm-hmm.
They're paid a lot in stock, and
right.
that's not necessarily a bad thing.
But they also have bonus goals based on the target.
Absolutely.
Targets based on the stock.
Their bonus goals should be based on profits and growth of the company, just like any business owner would normally do, instead of on the stock price, which is a combination of sort of empirical things as well as psychological things.
But, Dan, it is systemic, and I'll give you an example. I'm looking at an article, a report about Google stock sinking after missing their earnings target. I mean, I think their earnings was like 84% growth, but the analysts had projected 86% growth or something ridiculous like that. They had tremendous growth, but they missed it a couple of points. The stock dropped. That's ridiculous.
Well, if they had beaten it by the same percentage, the stock would have gone up a lot. I mean, that's the psychology of the market, and that's the, in a high-growth environment, small changes do in an analytical way, if you were to do the numbers on it, do make a difference to the value of a long-term value of a company.
I don't care what happens to the Wall Street traders. What I care about is the way companies focus the direction of their company, of their business, based on that rather than serving their customers and manipulating customers.
All right. If Google is a good company and a well-managed company, they will completely ignore what happened to their stock.
And I think that they may be a company to do that. Do you recommend that more executives out there do what you just said?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the recommendations in my book is that this has to do with insider trading, but it's important.
Go ahead. You've got 1 minute.
Executives can make a lot of money if they know about, good news or bad news that's coming, and they can sell their stock or buy more stock, whatever. I argue that you should make them disgorge any profits from stock sales, and that would help to focus them on running the business instead of focused on the stock price.
How much I've got less than a minute. How much insider trading is still going on?
It's hard to tell. In my book, I think I just touched the tip of the iceberg because I only know about telecom during a 14-year period. There's an awful lot of leakage that comes from the fact that bankers, analysts, traders, investors all live under the same roof in these investment banks.
Mm-hmm. It's virtually impossible to completely police that, though, isn't it? I mean, with so much information being held so closely, it's virtually impossible to stop it, isn't it?
Of course, it's impossible to eradicate it entirely, but the government, the SEC needs to do a lot more. Even the Elliott Spitzer investigations didn't even raise the issue of insider information.
Which I want to talk to you about when you come back. Will you do that? Will you come back another day?
I sure will.
Thank you. I've enjoyed having you on the show. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
Good job. Dan Reingold, ladies and gentlemen, the book is called Confessions of a Wall Street Analyst. It's a riveting book, folks, a very important book, and I recommend it to you. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners who always operate for your customers. This is Jim Blasingame. I'll be back on the other side of the news. Don't go away.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.